All right, those of you who have been looking at our printed program probably realize Steve Dove is not standing up here. That's because he won't be able to join us today. So instead, I have the pleasure of introducing my friend Sean Knotts. Sean Knotts is the Western Region Account Manager for Television Broadcast Systems at Electronics Research Inc. He's been with ERI for 13 years and has been directly involved with some of the largest broadcast tower and antenna projects in North America. In the past, he's served as project engineering manager and account manager for FM broadcast and for tower sales. He graduated from the University of Southern Indiana with a Bachelor's of Science in Electrical Engineering. Please welcome Sean Knotts.
Thank you, Steve. I got to make I got this presentation last Friday, and my colleague Dave Benko was supposed to be here giving this to me, and so Saturday he called me and goes, I can't be there, I'm at the IEEE. So I found out that I'm going to get this presentation, so bear with me. I've been cramming like back in college, and that's been years ago, so I'm going to get to this as best as I can. So this presentation, basically, you guys are being faced with repack, and you know, so you got your challenges on changing stations, getting your systems changed out, and not only that, they throw an ATSC 3.0 in this, so it's, you know, mixing you guys up a little bit, and basically this presentation, I'm hoping that you guys leave here with an idea or some options that you might have on getting your antenna system built for ATSC 3.0. So why ATSC 3.0? Well, consumers are demanding content on multiple platforms, cell phones, tablets, in-car, and improved indoor reception. And broadcast today is designed basically as a primary fixed case environment. And it's not really, it doesn't really support mobile reception, nor does it provide indoor robust reception. So ATSC 3.0 is supposed to be the answer to some of these shortfalls. It will enable broadcasters to reach the MATIC receiving environment and improve indoor reception. The standard is flexible enough to support everything from UHD to EAS, multiple audio standards, and content optimized for large and small screens. Something's wrong with my mouse here. Oh, there it is. Finally, ATSC 3.0 is an opportunity for the broadcast to interact directly with the consumer, such as target advertising. You're starting to send your commercials to a location where your viewers are at. And not only that, the consumer can interact with the broadcaster by, you know, surveys and let them know what, you know, what they're watching, so they can interact that way. Developing this new TV system is not only desirable, it's essential with the technologies coming at hand. So what's the difference between ATSC 1.0 and 3.0? Well, it's been 20 years since ATSC 1.0 was introduced. So 3.0, you're going to have higher data capacity, up to 30% with the same robustness. The ability for multiple physical layer pipes to have its own forward error correction. So the broadcaster can tailor the service, the desired service robustness. 3.0 can also support the latest compression standards to allow more content with less bits. And because it's an IP-based system, it's a natural fit with the internet and new technologies. Television has been, most part, mobile, stationary. Stationary. Is this picture, you guys probably have seen this before, and when I was growing up, we had one TV, and it was huge. If you wanted to move it, you had to call the neighbors over to help you move it around, you know? So, and now, in the last, you know, I'd say 10 years, homes have 4 to 5 flat-screen TVs mounted through all the house. Kids get to watch whatever they want in the room, and you can watch what you want in your man cave. Times are changing. My kids could care less about a 65-inch LCD screen. They want to watch it on their cell phone or a tablet in the back of the car. So things are changing, and we need to improve what we have. So the biggest obstacle at hand is delivery, getting the content to the consumer on their preferred device. So it makes sense that designing for services and fixed, handheld, and nomadic environments require different planning factors and signal strengths. Most, but not all antennas out there are H-pole. And this is good for a fixed case environment, but for mobile, it's not. Adding V-pole to the antenna can improve the quality of service for cell phones, handhelds, and improve in-building reception. And to add V-pole, To add V-pole to your new antenna design, you're looking at a price premium of 10 to 15%. Might seem like a price jump, but down the road, if you decided that you had to basically buy a completely new antenna. So you can optimize your coverage, you can optimize your coverage and verify that in an anechoic chamber. And basically, we design our antennas in a full-scale anechoic chamber. You would give us your coverage map, and basically what we would do is we would design the antenna, test it, and tune it in an anechoic chamber to make sure it works the way you intended it. And in special, appropriate situations, we might have to test this on an outdoor full-scale test range. So before I get ahead of myself, I want to make sure there's some definitions that I go about that I'm sure you guys are all aware of. But polarization, well, this is basically a textbook answer. Polarization basically tells you which direction your electrical field is oriented, basically selecting a preferred coordinate system. And in broadcast, it makes sense to talk about straight up, up and down, or left or right. Nothing more complicated than that. But for broadcast, it can either be constant, meaning in one direction at all times, or it can rotate with each wave cycle. And if you want to get deeper than that, you can break that down into orthogonal components, and you can do math on that. And I'm sure most of you guys are having a flashback like I did in an electromagnetics class going, when am I ever going to use this? You know, so there's three different types of polarization. Linear, like I mentioned, there's one orthogonal component in one direction. It can be purely vertical, horizontal, or any orientation in between. Circular component. A circular polarization is two orthogonal components when the V-pole and the H-pole, the magnitudes are equal. And elliptical polarization is when you have two orthogonal components but different amplitudes. So as I mentioned before, most antennas are out there are configured H-pole. So, you know, why would you want to have more energy in more than one polarization? This brings up the topic of polarization loss factor. So if you have a transmitting antenna that's oriented to provide H-pole excitation, and you take your receive antenna and you turn it 90 degrees in a vertical fashion, you get 90 degrees. And the cosine of 90 degrees is zero, so you have no power between the two antennas. And this is not good. You want that power to go to the consumer. So the orientation of the receive antenna is just as important as the orientation of the transmitting antenna. Now, in the old days, you guys, you know, you had your TV antenna on the roof, and if you weren't getting the picture in, you'd climb up your roof or your tower, and you go up there and orient just right until the picture came in, and you lock that down, and everything was good to go. But when you're talking about a receiver that's moving through your coverage area, and it's, you know, it's up your head, up your ear, or in front of you, or sitting on the desk, and you're only operating in H-pole polarization, this is when the polarization loss factor comes into play. And basically, your coverage is impacted, and you essentially are going to have a different coverage map for every polarization of your receive antenna. So what might you do to alleviate this is you might design an antenna that has a different XL ratio. So what is XL ratio, which AR, which I'll be bringing this up in a few slides here. But basically, it's very simple. It's how much energy is in one orthogonal component versus the other. And you might see this in a specification as vertical to horizontal ratio. So circular polarization, the AR, the XL ratio is 1, meaning that there's just as much energy in the H-pole there is in the V-pole. And linear polarization is 1 of those are 0. So there's a whole world between linear and circular, and that's what elliptical comes into play. And to be honest, I don't. Everybody's asking me, so how much V-pole should I put into my antenna? And I think the standard, you know, what's been asked by you got broadcasters is I want 30%. Was 30% enough? And You know, I think that's just a standard right now. I think that as you look into see where your population coverage and how you want to move your vPoll around and or how much vPoll you want to put, I think it's best makes sense at that point what kind of coverage that you want to do to incorporate that, to how much vPoll you actually want to put in. So what are the benefits of electrical polarization? Basically, you have an increase in coverage, your indoor mobile mobile reception is improved. Up here I have the no need to double your transmitter power output. So in a C-pole, a circular polarization application, you have to put just as much power in your H-pole as you do your V-pole. And some of you guys, I don't know if in this area, but some of you guys' ERP is 1 megawatt. Well, if you're operating H-pole only right now, you're putting maybe 50 to 60 kilowatts into that antenna. And if you double that, you know, you're looking at 100 to 120 kilowatts of, you know, of TPO. Well, I'm sure that your transmitter supply would love to sell you something like that, but I'm sure it's very expensive. And not only that, you have to feed it 24/7, 365, you know, and those power bills can be very expensive. So, you know, being able to use less than twice the transmitter power and increase your overall coverage, this is when electrical polarization makes the most sense. So the FCC does have some things to say on if you decide to go with a dual polarized antenna. If you do deploy that, the antenna must be designed for clockwise right-hand rotation. And the second is that the V-pole ERP cannot exceed the H-pole ERP in any direction. Basically, the V-pole pattern has to fit inside the H-pole. So now that you're ready to add V-pole and you have an idea on how much vPoll energy you would like to put in. So basically, you'd contact a company like ours and say, well, this is my coverage map. What kind of antenna design can you provide at that point? So this is when we go into the design process, and we will build a single bay of your antenna. And that single bay will include the slots, the dipoles, the pattern shapers, whatever it takes to get your pattern. And this is very important. You guys choose a coverage pattern to, you know, because that's who you want to to cover. So, and for us to put that into our anechoic chamber to prove to you that we can do it, I mean that's what you guys are looking for. So we'll measure the radiator data to make sure that we got that right. And you know if you know you say oh you know I'd like to maybe get a little more energy this way or this way, you know, we might put it back in and add some more shapers or adjust the couplings. So then when we have the azimuth pattern nailed down, we will develop a computer-generated model of the complete antenna. And that model is going to show us, okay, can the antenna be tunable? Is the antenna tunable? Will it handle the power? Will it have a good match? It'll also give us the elevation pattern performance. So once the antenna is fabricated and ready for tuning, we will go through a probe tuning process to verify the performance of the antenna. So there's a lot of steps that go into making sure that your antenna performs the way you intended it to. So you determine that you want an elliptical polarized antenna, and that doesn't narrow it down. So you have two different options. You can go static or dynamic. Static means that your axle ratio is fixed, and those are shown in both slot and panel antennas. And then you have the option for dynamic, means that the axle ratio can be variable. You can change it. And that's only an option in panel antennas. So I'm going to talk about slot antennas. I mean, if you look at this antenna, I mean, could anybody tell me if this is an E-pole or H-pole, C-pole antenna? Of course not. I mean, it's on the outside, they all look the same. Looks like they have a radome on the top of it. So, but the slot antenna can be, the V-pole can be excited by, you know, parasitically or directly. And I'm going to, so this is a picture of a naked antenna, if you guys are into that. It shows you the slots that make up the H-pole pattern, and then you have the dipoles that, if you look, you'll see like these wings above the slots and below and on the sides, and those make up the V-pole pattern. So they're fed directly, not parasitically. And this is a C-pole antenna that we provided to a customer a while back. So this photo to the left, you can barely see it, but basically it's a similar picture to the one I showed before, but the V-pole is fed by the a parasitic that's tied to the H-pole slot. So you're very limited on your V-pole pattern. You have to put a V-pole dipole element wherever there's a horizontal slot. So this can limit you and your pattern that you can provide, your V-pole pattern that you can provide. And as you see on the plot to the right, your blue line represents your H-pole and your red line represents your V-pole pattern. And that's the V-pole pattern that is made from the slot. So let's just say that, you know, I'd like to be able to rotate my V-pole pattern around. I don't want it to be fixed like that. Maybe my population's in a different area. And we'll take a look at the next slide here. So this is a directly coupled and a design. And what I mean by that, like I said in that picture before, the V-pole dipoles were separate from the H-pole. So basically you have the ability to move those V-pole dipoles around the pipe to get a different pattern and you can put these V-pole dipoles anywhere that there's not one or a slot, you know. So you have that liberty there. So in the plot to your right, you'll see the same thing, your H-pole and your V-pole, and with a parasitically coupled antenna, the V-pole pattern, the red pole, should have been rotated to the right to follow the peak. But with a directly coupled, you can move that pattern around to, let's just say you have an urban area to the south that you'd like to hit with your V-pole, and you're not really worried about, you know, maybe some farmland or something like that, or some cows that you're trying to transmit to. So I'm going to show you a couple of slides here. These are some just low power and standard patterns, and if this suits your guys' needs, you know, if you have an area where an omnioid pattern or a cardioid pattern works for you, that's great. You can choose that. And in the high power, you have a lot more options, you know. But let's just say that you know that your coverage map that you optimized, that, you know, it doesn't fit any of these, you know. And you'd like to have a little bit more energy, let's just say, to the right-hand side of the plot, to the left-hand, and like in the peanut pattern. But you want more energy to the east. I mean, we can do that, you know, where you want to have a V-pole pattern go just to the right-hand part of the peanut and not the left-hand. We can do that, you know. And these are just some standard patterns. So if you're looking for something customized, we probably can do it and design it in our anechoic chamber. So what are the advantages of a slot antenna? The weight and wind load are about 50 to 75% that of a panel antenna. The various power levels, a slot antenna can go from about 2 kilowatts all the way up to a 1 megawatt ERP we can design them to. As I mentioned, you can tailor your horizontal versus your vertical components for your pattern orientation. Your azimuth patterns, you can do standard, like I mentioned before, you can do a custom. Elevation, you know, you have your standard elevation, or if you want to mitigate some of the nulls that you have in your pattern, you might want to go with a smooth pattern design. You know, a slot antenna is pretty simple. You know, you have a pylon and you have an input, you know, and, you know, obviously the insides of the antenna are the main things, but as far as you have one input and you have the pylon. So, and they're easy to install. You know, if it's a top mount, you know, we designed the flange to mate with the top of the tower and the bolt pattern there. If it's a side mount, we designed a side mount to attach to your tower. The disadvantages, obviously, there are a few here. You have your bandwidth. You know, after, you know, a slot antenna can be, you know, maybe 2 to 3 channels wide, but after that, you know, the bandwidth is not there. And for side mounts, you have this huge tower here, and it's going to affect your pattern. And then another thing is if you guys decided, you know, okay, I'm in repack and my company doesn't really want to go with E-pole and I want to go with only H-pole, and that's what you buy. So basically down the road, after 3.0 has been implemented, you say, hey, I want to add 30 or 40% VPOL to this. I'm like, well, you call the right guy because I'll sell you a new antenna, but because you just can't add it to a slot antenna later down the road. So I'm going to talk about panel antennas. And as I mentioned before, you have two types. You have the static and dynamic. Static, your axial ratio stays the same, and your panel and your dynamic means it can be variable. That might be hard to see, but you have two antenna inputs, and just think of the left-hand side being your V-pole input and your right-hand side being your H-pole input. And you have your channels, your four channels below. And the reason I show four channels is because when you decide to go with a panel antenna, I mean, the main reason is because you want to put more than one station into it, and you all share the same pattern. So basically, you have this is a fixed antenna design for a panel system. It's pretty simple. Everybody shares the same axial ratio, and everybody shares the same pattern. So an interim design might be the dynamic elliptically polarization with constant axial ratio. And you might say, well, this looks just like the graph before, the figure before. But if you look up in the top left hand, you'll see a phase setting. And let's just say when you first implement this design and you want 30% V-pole, that's what you can operate off of, and everybody's operating off that. Let's just say you go down the road and you want to bump that up to 50% V-pole. So basically, you can go up there and change out the hybrid at that point, and you'd be at 50%. But everybody is at 50%. Everybody has the same pattern. So the most flexible but more complex solution would be the dynamically elliptical polarized antenna design. You have two feed lines that go up the tower. You have two combiners. Each transmitter, the output split, where you have a phase shift, and to go into one combiner, the V-pole combiner, basically, and then you have the other going into the H-pole. So this allows the station to be able to pick and choose what axial ratio they want to go with. So maybe channel the guy with the channel one, basically, he wants 30%. The next guy wants to go H-pole only. The fourth guy, third guy wants to go C-pole. They can do that. And if they want to change it down the road, they can do that as well. It would be incorporated into the transmitter. So as before, as with standard slot antenna patterns, we have standard panel antenna patterns. And like I mentioned before, this is not the only patterns that we can do. This is just our standard patterns that we've done before. So what are the advantages of the panels? It's broadband in nature. You have a high band VHF. If you have a channel, and the high band, your high band panel should work for all, or your high band channel will work for all channels. And that goes the same way for the UHF. The capability of doing dynamic polarization is huge. Again, this, you can go from low to high power. It can be designed for low power or high power applications. Your azimuth patterns, as I said before, we have standard and custom. Our elevation patterns, we can incorporate your electrical beam tilt, your null fill. And one thing is with your panel antenna, it's there's a lot of components, and that's a negative and a positive in a way. So let's just say one of your panels goes out, or one of your feeder cables burn up, you know, you can still operate on the antenna and just replace just one of those components rather than replace the whole entire system. The disadvantage, you have many panels, you have lots of components to deal with here, and that incorporates, you know, the high weight and wind load much more than a slotted antenna. They're complex. They have many cables. They have power dividers, mounts, and they can be complex. And the reason I say they can be complex is sometimes you'll get a panel system that we would design the tower support, and we'd wrap the panel, we'd wrap the tower section with the panels, and it'd show up on site, and you lift it like that. So that wouldn't be complex, but let's just say you want to put a panel system on existing structure. Well, then you have to make sure that you have the correct mounts, that the tower has enough room to put all your feeder cables and your power dividers in. So the complex installations. And the complexity, as I showed in that picture a while ago with the dynamic, you have two transmission lines to worry about. You have two combiners. You know, you have to have special transmitters that's in place for that. So I wanted to put up this real world example. WRAL was the very first station, channel 39 in Raleigh, North Carolina, to go on the air with ATSC 3.0. Now, none of you guys saw it, and I didn't see it either, because there's only maybe three receivers in the world that actually can do it, that can broadcast it, so, or it can receive it. But they called up ERI, and we provided them with a UHF panel antenna with a fixed E-pole. I think it was like 30% V-pole, and we provided them with a tunable mask filter, which, I mean, this doesn't look like a big antenna, and but it's you know, this is the very first station on the air with 3.0, and they got it to work. So in conclusion, you're planning a system that you want to achieve 3.0, and it has very many different planning factors that go into when you designed a system for 1.0. And, 1.0 didn't take into consideration, you know, mobile indoor reception that the 3.0 requires. So the broadcaster has many choices. You know, as I mentioned, H-pole, E-pole, C-pole, you know, panel, slot, axial ratio. You have plenty of things to go through here. And antennas are not cheap, and you need to be aware of, the pros and cons, the trade-offs, and, make the best design that you can for what you had to work with. So it can be very expensive if you don't choose the right, you know. Antennas are not cheap. Systems are not cheap. So we look at this that, you know, we're going into the repack in ATSC 1.0 world, and we see the challenges that the broadcasters are faced with, the timeline, the budget, you know, and I believe that once we exit the repack, we're going to be in a 3.0 world, ATSC 3.0 world, and, you know, you need to determine on what your company's position is going to be like whenever that happens. And, you know, and you need to make sure that you're ready for that. So I guess do your homework, and if there's anything that we can help out, let me know. And good luck. If there's any questions?
As part of your services, structural analysis for towers that are changing antennas, assuming let's say, for instance, they get a panel antenna, is there anything that you folks do with regards to making sure that the tower will handle the physical challenges that the antenna will bring to it?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, as, you know, we have in-house engineering for on the structural side. So when we design a, or when we analyze a tower, you know, we want to make sure that it's up to code. And one of the things is, as far as, you know, there's a lot of towers out there that were built in the 40s and 50s that were built to see, and now you're putting an antenna on there, and you know, as far as anything else you put on the tower, is it going to fail? And you not only have to put your antenna up, you have to put an interim antenna up. So, you know, we're looking at ways to reinforce towers if it's possible. And, you know, that could be from tightening guy wires to, you know, reinforcing legs. In some instances, I've seen where the top of the tower might be shortened just so, you know, it'll pass with a new antenna loading. So that's a very important thing And if it's not us that's analyzing the tower, you know, we provide all the mechanical specifications that are needed for whoever's analyzing the tower to be able to run it and make sure that the tower is compliant.
Anticipating the need here over the next couple of years, as the manufacturer, are you planning to ramp up your ability to get these put out in a timely fashion?
Yes. Before this repack basically took place, the standard, we were able to produce 6 to 8 antennas a month. And we basically ramped up, as an ERI, we ramped up, and we built 3 new buildings. Some of you, the people in here, have been by the facility, but we ramped up with our, not only our buildings, our equipment, we've hired the correct people in there, and they've been there for over a year, and so we've trained them that, you know, so whenever this does happen, you know, we're going to be ready. You know, we We have our own installation crews. We had two, and we're ramping that up to four. We already have four crews. We have the equipment to the gen poles and everything like that to take care of this. So, there's not a lot of antenna manufacturers that are out there you can choose from, but we are prepared. So, any more questions? All right. Go Cubs. I had to say that.